It is great to see you all, church. Thank you very much for being a part of our services here at Azalea City. I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to present God's Word to you today. Today, I am going to continue in our series that we've been talking about. But first, before I go any further, I want to thank Justin, who did a great job. And it was really one of the first times I can remember that I've worshiped along with us as we had our live stream. And I'd like to thank our IT guys. Everything worked perfect. The only time it would not have is when, you know, we were maybe in an area that had not very good signal. But between my phone, Michelle's phone, we were able to get it going. And so Justin did a great job talking about being real. Authenticity. That's what we have to be. We can't be those that wear a mask. Sometimes along the way, though, when it comes down to faking it till we are making it, we sometimes maybe fake some fears, or maybe not fake fears, but fake courage to overcome those fears. Maybe we have a lot of fears going on, a lot of anxieties in our lives, and sometimes we might struggle with our courage. Well, you know, to be a Christian, it takes courage. What is courage? Courage is what I like to call having a backbone. Like to call maybe having some guts about us. Having some fortitude, something that will allow us the opportunity to always put in a good word for Jesus Christ. You see, I talked Wednesday night about Esther. Remember, Esther was nervous. She had anxiety about, even though she knew the job was big, she had nervousness about going before the king. The king loved her very much, but he was the king. And he had to reach out that golden scepter, and she said, what if he doesn't? And Mordecai basically said, hey, you've got to do it. You've got to do it because you were delivered here. You are raised up in this authority for such a time as this. I don't know all of your life story. I know a lot of the life stories in here. I love that people are so willing to tell their story. But at the end of the day, I don't know what you're going through every day of your life. You don't know what I'm going through every day of my life. I may share a lot of that with you, but no one truly knows unless we are us, right? But here's what I can say. I do know that as long as we take up our cross every day and put Jesus Christ first in our lives, then whatever situation we're faced with, if we will have the courage to stand for what's right, if we will have the gut, the backbone to stand for what is right, then no matter what happens to us, God will be glorified. And that's what it's all about. You see, God is worthy of that. God deserves that. God demands that. And we as Christians have to be willing to put in that good word for Jesus Christ. Today, though, I'm going to take you to a story that maybe we know, but we don't preach on a lot. You see, he was a man who was just a simple man, if you will. He was an ordinary man. He was a man, a human kind like you and like me. He was a farmer, and he enjoyed his trade. He was, that's what he was. He was a farmer. Probably his dad was a farmer. Granddad was a farmer, and that was handed down to him, and he enjoyed what he did. Unlike some farmers out there, he had no desire to be anything more than a farmer. That was his life ambition. You know, there are some people today that they are, they're what they are because their dad was, their grandpa was, or their mom was. You know, you understand how it goes. And they're just fine with that, and there's nothing wrong with that. It takes all kinds to make the world go around, right? But at the end of the day, they have no desire to better themselves, no desire to get out of the situation they're in. They're just going to be this because that's the way they were taught to be and that's all they know how to be. That's like this man was. Just a very simple person. He never had any political ambitions, nor did he dream of becoming a military leader. But God, you see, God had a different plan for his life. The Gideon story in the Old Testament is unique. It's unique because it's in this story that God makes a hero out of one of the most unlikely people. It's a story that teaches us, reminds us, challenges us that great things can happen when we allow God to elevate our courage. You see, God's looking for a Gideon today. Gideon being a male, but he's looking for Gideon in the female version. He's looking for Gideon in the male version. He's looking for Gideon in the teenage version. He's looking for Gideons all around us. He is looking to those who are willing to stand up. You see, I could have used Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They had great courage, didn't they? I could have used them because their story is so familiar to us. It's so powerful. Hey, the music is playing. Are we going to bow down? Unfortunately, there are a lot of people bowing down today. So that sermon could have preached. I could have used Daniel. I talked to him about him a few weeks ago. Could have pulled him out for this story too. Daniel, faced with the lion's den, had great courage. I could have used Paul because Paul, time and time again, was faced with danger after danger after danger, and he always adopted the attitude, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ, for it is the power of God and the salvation. I could have used all those characters, but I chose Gideon. I chose Gideon because of this reason. We don't talk about him a lot. Maybe he's not on the same level in our minds as a Paul or a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego or a Daniel or a fill in the blank. But it shows Gideon because he was just a simple person trying to just get through in life. But God saw something in him. And he took his concerns and he took his courage and he accomplished great things. God's still looking for that Gideon today. Men and women of faith who are willing to step out and do great things. The story of Gideon takes place in the book of Judges. Begins in Judges chapter 6 and goes really through chapter 8 verse 35. You remember how the judges worked? Remember how we had judges to begin with? Why did we have judges? Because God's chosen people. Now hear me out on this for a moment. Here's a little bit of history lesson. Here's a little bit of supernatural lesson, if you will, because God is supernatural, right? God wanted a global Eden. He wanted a global paradise. One where he was king. One where he called all the shots. And man and woman revered him, bowed down to him, listened to him, and it didn't take very long in what was going to be a global Eden for mankind to mess that up. So once that Eden, which was different than all the other places on earth, once that Eden was fouled up with sin and selfishness, God had to make another nation. He had to make a nation that wouldn't be like any of the other nations. Now, time and time again, they messed up. But God was patient with them. He always kept a remnant. He always kept a portion that was going to eventually bring Jesus Christ into the world so that we can today have the church, which is His global Eden. Can you follow me? That people was Israel. God wanted to be king. He demanded to be king. Just like He is the king of our church, the king of this kingdom, He wants to be king of Israel. He wants to be king. He wants to be king of our lives. And He deserves it. But guess what? You know what those wanted to do? they wanted to be like the other nations. You think that slapped God in the face? He's done all this to try to make a global Eden. But they said, no, we want to be like the other nations. Samuel was dejected. Samuel, the last judge, he was dejected. Remember when they said that and they wanted a king. Before that, they also wanted one and God said no. So what he did was raise up judges. He tried to give them an in-between. These judges, boy, some of them were some rough people. They were also raising a rough nation. They were trying to rule over some ridiculous people. People wanting to be like the other nations. And right here in the middle of it all, Joshua's passed away. God's raised up these judges. And now we have Gideon. Gideon is ruling God's people in this kind of setting where the people have been good for a little while and now they're bad. And they're in a bad moment. And so Gideon is one of these local judges, if you will, raised up by God to deliver a localized group of Israelites from a group of people known as the Midianites and Amalekites. You see that in Judges 6 verse 3. The Midianites and the Amalekites have kind of invaded and they persuaded some of Israel to go back over there and they're ruling in this. And so God needs somebody that will get all this straight. The Midianites were stealing Israel's crops. They were stealing their herds and they were destroying what they couldn't take with them. And guess what? Israel didn't have the courage to stand up to them. You know how long this went on? It didn't go on for a day or two. It didn't go on for a month or two. It went on for 7 years. 7 years, the Midianites and the Amalekites would come and say, hey, give me that. And Israel would be like, okay, you can have it. I mean, see how silly this is? God's people. And so he needs a strong leader, right? He needs somebody to stand up. He needs somebody. But he didn't choose that person. He chose Gideon. And we're going to see Gideon wasn't a very strong person. In fact, there were so many times that he struggled. But they invaded and they took from them for 7 years and it's starting to get a little old. So you know what the people finally do? After 7 years, they start crying out to God. And so that's where he needed somebody to lead his people. Firstly, out of military oppression. Secondly, out of moral oppression. And that person then was Gideon. Gideon, I like this slide. I didn't make it, but I found it. It calls him the underdog warrior. And I thought that was really good. Because that's what he is. He's not the big, tall person that's been this great military leader. He's just an ordinary farmer and he's happy and content with life. And that's all he wants to do. You see, when you think of a hero, right? You think of a hero. And that's what I think about when I think of heroes. I think about somebody that wears the cape. Somebody that has the power. Somebody that's strong. Somebody that's mighty. Somebody that's a leader. That's not who Gideon was. You usually think of somebody that is full of strength, intellect, personal charisma, beauty, or enormous wealth. Gideon was none of these. In fact, he started out as a bitter and weak farmer, but he's transformed into a warrior in a most unlikely fashion. What he experienced is what I like to call a personal revival. You know what I think the church needs in 2021? Revival. I think we need revival. Revival, I know this year is coming to an end, and 2022 brings new hope again. We went through 2020 and we thought we can't wait till 2021 gets here. And then there's more variants and there's more doors closes and there's more this and more that. And gas prices are shooting up and inflation is shooting up and all this stuff. And now all of a sudden, God's people, wear this muzzle. I need y'all to hush. I don't need you to talk about Jesus. I don't need you to talk about the Bible. I don't need you to do that. And so here all of a sudden, a lot of Christians, I'm not saying you and I'm not saying me, have sat around and we're just silently twirling our thumbs. Time to be revived. Church-wide revival has to begin with personal revival. And what happened in Gideon's case was a great object lesson for us today in personal revival. In order for Gideon to become a great leader, that underdog warrior. Number one, we have to understand, he started as a coward. Let's look at the text now. Judges chapter 6, beginning in verse 11. Judges chapter 6, starting in verse 11. We're going to go now through verse 15. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash, the Abiezrite, while his son Gideon threshed wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord, by the way, many scholars believe that's literally Jesus Christ, the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." Now, I want you to know, he's not yet. And I love that again, the angel of the Lord, if that is Jesus Christ, let's just think that way for a moment. If that is Jesus Christ, and I know that might be mind-blowing, but just say if it is, okay? If it is God in the flesh, an angel, I know we think of angels certain ways, but they were messengers, okay? This is the messenger. You got to think of it that way. The messenger of the Lord. If he showed up to Gideon, and he said, Gideon, who's pressing out wine in this wine press, trying to be quiet and trying to hide it from the Midianites because for 7 years they've been taking everything they've got. He says, "You mighty man of valor." I mean, that probably made him feel uncomfortable a little bit. Because he knows he's not. Gideon said to him, "Oh my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to me?" Is that cowardly? Sounds like it to me. Happened to us. "And where are all his miracles which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites." I mean, listen to that. Isn't that the way the tongue works? People would tell stories about, hey, maybe year one, okay? Year one, the Midianites and Amalekites, they come in and they say, "Give me all this," and they've given it over to them. And now they gather some of the older people of the city and they still got some courage about them, like, "Hey, God's going to fight for us. Don't you think he's not? He brought us out of Egypt. Remember our ancestors." And so the younger guys start buying into that, but year two rolls around, three rolls around, four, five, six, seven now. Those old people are saying, "Yeah, he brought us out of Egypt, but where is he today?" By the way, Gideon's telling the messenger of the Lord, "I'm not a man of valor. Where have you been? Where have you been?" Verse 14, "Then the Lord turned to him and said, 'Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you?'" Can you imagine the confusion on Gideon? Verse 15, "He said to him, 'Oh my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan,'" get this now, this is where I get coward from, "'is the weakest
in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." Gideon, at least right here in the story, is not exactly Samson, is he? I mean, what a compare contrast, right? If you take Gideon and you take Samson, Samson was ripping gates off walls, and he was tying foxes' tails up, and he was killing thousands of people with the jawbone of a donkey. He was a mighty man. But he made a lot of dumb mistakes. Here, Gideon really starts out as a coward. Mighty man of valor, are you kidding me? I am of the weakest tribe in all of Manasseh, and I am the least in all my household. He's hiding down in a wine press threshing wheat. You know what they normally, how they normally made threshed wheat? They normally used an open flat place where the winds and open air would blow away the chaff. But Gideon was hiding in a wine press beneath a tree, threshing wheat with a stick, desperately trying to save a little bit of food that he had hidden from the Midianites. Again, it's not exactly a picture of a courageous hero. To me, it's a picture of a defeated, discouraged man filled with doubts and fears. Not only was he in the wine press physically, but spiritually and emotionally, he was there as well. It appears that Gideon has become timid, and that has brought bitterness. While being challenged to deliver Israel, he said to the messenger of the Lord, "Pardon me, but if the Lord is with us, why has such disaster overtaken us?" I believe two things contributed to the cowardice of Gideon here. And that's what I just said, bitterness and timidity. Gideon was set up to live a life of frustration. He was bitter with God for not coming through for him and his family and his people. In addition to the bitterness, Gideon felt that he had nothing to offer to help improve things. He didn't feel he had the skills and power to turn things around. You ever thought that could be us today? Think about it. This whole takeover that it appears from our country, from the evil one, where sin will reign supreme, and babies will be slaughtered, and the gospel needs to be thrown out, and we need to have this in our education system. We need to not make sure that there's any God, and just keep racism and bitterness and hatred all stirred up, because that sells, and that spikes ratings, and that makes people look like cowards, and we can keep our thumb over them all of our lives. That kind of mentality, we might look at that and say, how can I change a country? How can I change a government? What can I do? So instead, we get bitter because of our timidity. It's like a little child who goes into a dark room. They're afraid of what might be in there. But all we got to do is turn on the light. You see, today light bulbs need to go off. Lights need to be turned on. Fires need to be lit, because you and I may not be able to tackle the world, but we can tackle the path in front of us. And we can change a life And we can change a family. And we can change a soul by pointing them to the one who can save them. We have got to come out of hiding. The enemy, Satan, will use everything he can to bully us and manipulate us. You know how to stand up to a manipulator and to a bully? You just stand up to them. And you know what they do? They run. When Jesus stood up to him, he fled. Resist the devil. And he will what? Flee from you. Gideon didn't stay a coward. Even though he started out that way, the next step in Gideon's life, he became a challenger. Judges 6, now 16 through 23. And the Lord said to him, "Surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man." Then he said to him, "If now I have found favor in your sight, then show me a sign that it is you who talked with me." He still needed some proof, but he's getting there. "Do not depart from here, I pray, until I come to you and bring out my offering and set it before you." And he, this is the angel of the Lord, said, "I will wait until you come back." Verse 19 now. So Gideon went in and prepared a young goat and unleavened bread from an ephah of flour. The meat he put in a basket, and he put the broth in a pot, and he brought them out to him under the terebinth tree and presented them. The angel of God said to him, "Take the meat and the unleavened bread and lay them on this rock and pour out the broth." And he did so. Then the angel of the Lord put out the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the meat and the unleavened bread. And fire rose out of the rock and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread. Got my attention now. I don't know about yours. Got Gideon's too. And the angel of the Lord departed out of the sight. Now Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord. So Gideon said, "Alas, O Lord God, for I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." Then the Lord said to him, "Peace be with you. Do not fear. You shall not die." You know, even though at this moment in his life, Gideon has still got some apprehension, I mean, I can relate to that. He still has some anxiety about it. He's willing to take a risk, and it started right there in his own home. This inspired at least 10 to go with him on this occasion. You know what he does a little bit later on? He rallies 32,000. Listen to that now. He's gonna go from this coward threshing wheat in the wine press, hiding from everyone so that he can have a little food. That's a coward. To now, he's going to become a challenger. He's starting to get it. He's starting to hear some things that he likes. He's starting to see some hope. He's starting to see some good. And so he's going to rally 10. Then he's going to rally 32,000. The great thing about risk-taking is that it inspires others to move out in faith. It's amazing what one play can do on a football field. You know, I saw some things this year in our football team from young guys, even my son included, that when they did something, it rallied the whole team. You know, if I was told a story this morning by a dad whose son did some things and it rallied the whole team. You know, I want you to know, don't think of yourself as coward that you can't inspire people, because there may be something you do today that can rally this whole church. And it can start a great revival. But I want you to know something. We can't win the battles in the wine press. We can't win the battles in the wine presses. We've got to get out and we've got to get in the battle. We don't go out and pick fights, but we can't cower down to them either. We need to accept the challenge so we can, like Gideon, become the final point of the day. He went from a coward to a challenger to a conqueror. I don't have time to read all the story, but I hope I inspire you to go back and study Gideon some. In chapter 7, I told you he had 32,000. He rallies 10 and that turns into 32,000. Now picture this, okay? Gideon feels pretty good now. I got 32,000 people going to fight with me. You know what God told him? Send the ones that want to go home, home. Okay? So he did. You know how many left? How many left? 22,000. If you look at verse 3, 22,000 of the people returned and 10,000 remained. All right, that's okay. Okay, I got this. I got it. Yeah. All right. Got it. You know, you got me out of the wine press. I've accepted the challenge. I'd like to have 32,000. Now I got 10,000. God said, now do this. Send them down to the river. Okay. As they go to the river, the ones that get on their hands and knees and just lap the water up like this, send them home. The ones that drink like this, 300 remain. Are you kidding me? You just took a guy that was hiding in a wine press. To rally 10, to rally 32,000, to send 22,000 home, and now he sent 9,700 of them home. But he's down to 300. Judges 7:19. So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just set the watch, and they blew the trumpets and smashed the jars that were in their hands, then the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the jars. They held in their left hands the torches, in their right hands the trumpets to blow, and they cried out, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Every man stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran. They cried out and fled. When they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the enemy, and the army fled. Gideon. He started by being bitter, by being timid, because those Midianites, those Amalekites, they weren't trying, they were stealing their food, and they've been doing it for 7 years. And so now here I am, because bitterness has been handed down. Isn't that the way it goes? People tell about bitterness, and bitterness catches on, and negativity catches on, and all those things, and now all this. And so now he's threshing out this wheat. Should have been out in the front of everybody, but he's threshing out just so they can have a little bit of wheat to eat. And the angel of the Lord shows up, and he says, "You're a mighty man of valor." He says, "Oh, no, I'm not. I'm the least in Manasseh. I'm the least in my own house." He says, "I want you to accept the challenge." He said, "Okay, I'm a little bit nervous about it, but I will." So he accepts the challenge. He rallies 10, then he rallies, "Hey, we could do this. We can fight Midian. We can beat them. We can do it. 32,000. Yeah, we can." God said, "No, it's too many. Ask them if they want to go home. Go home. 22,000 of them do. Take them to the water. 300 remain." He said, "Now that I've got those who've elevated their courage, watch how I'll beat them." And they take those 300 and they get these torches and they make all this noise and they blow those trumpets, and just like that, they overcome the Midianites. We can go from coward conqueror. just by allowing God in our lives today. Peter and others went from coward to challenger to conqueror to champion. Not everybody will do it. Some will, at the end of the day, say they want to do it, but they really don't. And they'll just go home. Some won't prepare themselves, and they'll drink and do things their own way. Won't look out for the enemy. But there'll be a remnant. There'll be a group, starting today, that says enough is enough. Red Rover, Red Rover, send Satan right over. He's not going to penetrate me. He's not going to defeat this church. We're going to go and get our people back. We're going to grow, and we're going to thrive, and we're going to conquer. Are you one of those few? Do you have the courage today to say, yes, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Yes, I'm ready to enter the army. Yes, I'm ready to be baptized into Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of my sins. Or is the devil going to keep you in the wine press? Are you here today and you've done things publicly? You need to come forward. You need to step out. But, oh no, there's just something about that pew. I can't do it. Are you willing to be one of those 300 today? Or are you willing to do it in your seat? There's a Gideon in all of us. But we've got to get out of the wine press. And I encourage you to do it right now. So together, we stand and sing.